Okay. Name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. So I'm so happy to be here. It's so nice to, I feel like I'm back at home, and to see so many faces that I miss, actually. So before we start, I want to just kind of have a gauge of where everybody is in terms of their family situation. So raise your hand if your children are grown and out of the house. Oh, wow. Okay. Two, three. Okay. Raise your hand if you have middle and high schoolers. Okay. This makes me feel so old. You guys shouldn't have middle and high schoolers. Raise your hand if you have elementary. Okay, good. Toddlers? Also? Okay. Nobody yet? No kids yet? Okay. All right. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So here we have a picture of a racehorse. And there's a yellow mask on the horse. What is that? What is it? Okay. So the yellow mask is blinders. They cover the peripheral vision of a horse because horses have excellent peripheral vision. That's why, I don't know if you know this is just an aside, you never walk over to the side of a horse because it spooks them, right? You always come to a horse directly from the front. So why does this horse have blinders? What? Okay, so it can focus. Focus on what? On what? Okay, so it needs to focus on its race, right? I can't hear you. To stay on the track, yes. So the racehorse has blinders so that it can focus to be able to stay on its path. Actually, the same is for us because we have a path that we need to stay on. And we need to be able to be focused on our path as well so that we're not spooked and so that we're not distracted. How many of you have ever heard of Pilgrim's Progress? One person? Seriously? Okay, all of y'all who have little kids, you need to read Pilgrim's Progress. If you have not heard about it, it's written by somebody named John Bunyan. It was written in the 1600s. Sorry. Hi. So it was a book that was written in the 1600s, and it's an allegory of the Christian life. And basically, it talks about Christian, who is an individual, and Christian has a burden. And Christian wants to get rid of his burden. And so he encounters an evangelist. And the evangelist tells Christian that in order to be able to get rid of this burden, he has to go to the celestial city. And when he goes to the celestial city, the burden will be released. It'll be removed. And then he tells him that here's the path for you to go to the celestial city. And then the rest of the book talks about what happens to Christian when he starts to walk on the path. So last year, in April, there was a movie that was made about Pilgrim's Progress. And again, it hasn't come out in DVD, but if you haven't heard about this, when it comes out in DVD, if you have little kids, you should get it and watch it first because there are some parts in it that are kind of scary. But there's a clip that I want us to take a look at that really talks about what we're going to talk about tonight. So Christian is on the path and he has his burden. And he is going forward to the celestial city. He's got his eye on the goal. And then he meets somebody. And the person that he meets is called the worldly wise man. And the worldly wise man has other things to offer him and things to suggest to him. So let's take a look. And of course, we don't have audio. So that's good. No audio? No audio. Okay, anyway, I'll narrate. So the worldly wise man is offering all of these jewels. He goes over to Christian and he welcomes him with open arms. He's very hospitable to him. He asks him what he's doing. And then Christian starts by telling him, I'm on the way to the celestial city. And then immediately he doesn't get to finish his sentence because the worldly wise man tells him, oh, you're on your way to the celestial city. Who told you about that? Was that the crazy evangelist who told you that you're supposed to walk on this dry, dirty path? No. There are all these other paths, and as you noticed, all the other paths were what? What was it about all the other paths that were different from the path that he was supposed to walk on? They were what? Clean, okay. Wider. Easier. I don't know if they were actually shorter. Do you want me to go replay it? Like the most obvious thing. What? Were they paved? Actually, I'm going to replay it. So one more time. Take a look at the paths. So they're full of all kinds of different things. And they are what? They're decorated. They're glittery. They're shiny. They're there to be able to attract his attention, right? Off of the path. And if you actually watch the movie or you read the book, you notice, you'll see that he gets distracted by one of the paths and he actually goes down it. And then you can read about what happens. A millennium earlier than this, Saint Diodocus of Futiki said, all men are made in God's image, but to be in his likeness is granted only to those who through great love have brought their own freedom into subjection to God. For only when we do not belong to ourselves do we become like him who through love has reconciled us to himself. No one achieves this unless he persuades his soul not to be distracted by the false glitter of the world. A millennium more, it was actually 1,100 years, before this analogy was out there, there was a saint in the church who was talking about how, as human beings, we have something in us that gets attracted to the false glitter of the world. That we allow ourselves to be able to be distracted by things that are shiny, things that are flickering at us, things that are noisy. To get distracted then takes us away from our ultimate goal. So are the distractions necessarily evil? No. They're not necessarily evil. They're just shiny. Have you ever seen, what's that movie? The kid with the Up. Have you ever seen Up? Okay, you see the dog in Up? Yeah, exactly. So the dog is like going after things and all of a sudden there's a squirrel. And he's like, squirrel! And then his attention completely shifts onto where the squirrel is. We have a tendency actually to be kind of like that. We're walking along, we're on our path, we know that we're going to the celestial city because all of us still carry burdens with us, and then something pops up, and our attention is taken away from our goal, and we move our head over to the side. And typically, whatever has our attention has our what? Huh? Okay, has our mind on it. And the things that have our mind on it have our what? Has our heart, okay? And the things that have our heart, Abuna hates it when I do this because he's like, nobody can read your mind. Why do you keep doing that? But I'm going to keep doing it because you're going to get there. Focus. Has your focus, whatever has your focus, has your what? What is the one resource we have that we can't get back? Time. Time. Whatever has our attention has our time. And that is the one resource we can never, ever get back. So what we're going to talk about for the rest of this time is the things that might have our time. The things that take our focus off of our goal. And then where our focus goes, that's where the rest of us goes. And then to see if we go on different paths based on this. So in a given day, any given day, today, where would you say that most of your distractions come from? And by distractions, this is what I mean. You sat down to do something, or you walked in a room to get something, and then there was an interruption. What was that interruption? Kids. Okay. What? Cell phones. Work. Work. Who said that? Okay. Work. Oh, because you're working outside the boundary of work. Ah, okay. Work. Yes. What else? Internal thoughts also can be our distractions. Most definitely. Yes. That's it? You guys, that's the only things you're distracted by? Nobody gets distracted, like because they're hungry? Nobody gets distracted because they're sleepy? I'm just kind of putting that out there. Social media. Okay? Raise your hand if you would say that your number one distraction, so we're going to put kids aside, all right? That's just, like, they're not really a distraction. I mean, that's kind of really what we're supposed to be focused on. But how many of us really, our distractions come from our technology, like our phones or social media or texting or phone calls or things like that? Wow, not the majority of you? Okay, so for those of you who raised your hand, this is good because this will be very relevant to you. For those of you who didn't raise your hand, I think this is a good time to reflect. And to see, did y'all hear what he said? Because it's worth listening to. He said if you didn't raise your hand, it's because you were busy on your phone. It's not just technology, actually. I'm not going to be dogging on technology, because technology is an amazing thing. It's really our lifestyle in general, that we are so busy, that we're busy with after-school activities and running here and running there and doing this for work or going to these different places. It is our whole lifestyle. And rarely, as Americans, do we ever get to stop or slow down and just be. When was the last time you just, like, were? You just sat in a place and you got to enjoy what was going around without any kind of any pull on you. If your answer was today, that's awesome. Whatever you did today, keep that going. For most of us, it was some distant time in the past. And, like has been said, most of us carry our major source of distraction actually in our pockets. Most of us carry the thing that pulls us away from other people in our pocket, because that's our cell phone. So let's talk about some interesting facts. 26 years ago. So I remember when there was no internet. And I remember when it first came out, and it was amazing. And the web search engine was WebCrawler. Anybody remember that? Other than me? Thank you. WebCrawler. And WebCrawler could work well because there were only 600 websites. Right? And it took minutes in order to actually bring up results. I remember when I was working and I was sitting in front of the computer and I would type something in, and literally it was minutes. I'm sitting there waiting for the result, but I didn't know any better, so it was just an amazing experience. Now, if it took minutes, I'd be calling like the tech guy, finding out what's wrong with my computer, because it should be there instantaneously. So 26 years ago, there were only 600 websites total in the world. 24 years ago, laptops entered the market. And they were these monstrosities, like not like the laptops that we have today. 23 years ago, email came on the scene. So email actually had existed before that, but it was only in the universities. And then it became something that was for everybody to participate in. 21 years ago, Google was invented. For the majority of the people in this room, your children will not have existed in a time when there was no Google. They will never have experienced having a question and not going to Uncle Google to have it answered. 2004 was Facebook, and in 2004, only 45% of teenagers had cell phones. And the cell phones that they had were what kind of cell phones? They were flip phones, which I'm just going to give a little plug. If you're going to get your little ones a phone, get them a flip phone, even though you have to pay extra for it now. It's worth it. Get them a flip phone. 2005, YouTube was invented. 2006, Twitter. 2007, iPhone. It would be very interesting if you go and you watch the YouTube of Steve Jobs introducing the iPhone. Because the way that he sells the iPhone is, this is such a great thing that has now on the market, because this is like having an iPad with your, I mean an iPod with your phone. The selling point of the iPhone was that you don't have to carry two devices. That was the point of the iPhone. That was Steve Jobs' vision of the iPhone, which is that you don't have to carry two devices. You can listen to your music, and it has this great ability to scroll through so that your phone calls and your texting also is kind of seamless. It makes it a great way to communicate with other people. Nowhere in his mind, at least that I know of, or that has been documented, nowhere in his mind did he conceive of what actually has happened with all of the apps and everything else that has come because of that. All of that seems like it was an unintended consequence. In 2010 was Instagram, 2011 Snapchat. 2018, 95% of the teenagers in the United States have a phone, and they don't have flip phones. 95% of the teenagers in the States, so when I say teenagers, I'm talking 13-year-olds. This isn't like 19-year-olds. This is from 13 years old, 95% of the kids are with a cell phone on them, in their pocket, just like we have cell phones in our pockets. Yes. So, here's my opinion. Which is what we offered our kids. We told them, well, we're happy to get you a phone. We know that you need to be able to make calls, and if you want to text your friends, that you'll be able to do that. Your option is, you can either have a flip phone or you don't get a phone. What would you like? And of course, they weren't happy about it. They're kids. But here's our job. Our job is to parent. Their job is to push. Like, that's what a kid does. They push the envelope. That's what we did. We pushed the envelope. The problem is that when we were younger, the envelope that we pushed wasn't quite as close to the precipice. It wasn't quite as close to the edge of the mountain, right? But that's their job. Like, that's what they do. Our job is to draw the line and to stand there and to tell them, I love you. This is not going to benefit you. This is what we're going to do. But for those of you who have children who are younger than 11, it's, and we'll talk about this as we go on, but to rear them in a way so that we teach them how to use the technology and that they don't get drowned in the wave that the world has for them, in telling them that they have to have this in order to be connected to other people, in telling them that they have to have this in, or else they're going to be missing out on things. Because quite honestly, that's a lie. It may be that they miss out on some things when they're 10, 11, 12, or 13, but when they're 19, 20, 21, 22, they're going to be far better developed human beings than if they had it. So what we have to do is we have to make sure that we have the foresight for them, and to help them understand what wisdom is. So, yeah, is it going to be a fight? Yes, it is. It is going to be a fight. But we're parents, so we kind of signed up for that. Here's another interesting timeline. 2019, let's just focus on the 2019. In an internet minute, in a minute, in 60 seconds. That would be good if I could read it. There were 1 million people logging onto Facebook. In a minute, 1 million people are logging onto Facebook. In a minute, there are 4.5 million people watching YouTube. In a minute, there's 87,000 tweets. In a minute, there's 1.4 million swipes on Tinder. And guys, if you don't know what Tinder is and you have little kids, you need to find out what it is. 1.4 million swipes on Tinder. And then there's like the usual, you know, 188 million emails being sent. That's in a minute. 1 minute, 60 seconds in a day. 60 seconds in a day, $1 million is being spent buying things. Hi. Sorry. There's 2.7 Snapchats being sent out in a minute. Who's doing all this? Who's sending out all these Snapchats? Nadine's sending out some of them. No, I'm kidding. Who's sending out all these Snapchats? Oh, are the adults sending out Snapchats? Who's sending them out? Teenagers. Teenagers are sending out Snapchats. In a minute. So what we talked about before was whatever has our attention has our what? Has our time. Whatever has our attention has our time. This is what our kids are spending their time on. Of the teens say that they're online almost constantly. Almost constantly. In 2014, 2015, so that was 4 years ago, 24% of the teens said that they were online almost constantly. Now, 45% say that they're online almost constantly. So I want you to think about that. Our kids are constantly connected. And it's not like they're carrying their phone and they have access online. They're online. How many of you have seen, this drives me crazy, and I'm fighting it in my own house, and it is a constant battle. How many of you have seen the kids with their ear pods in their ears all the time? Yeah. It's maddening. It's maddening because they're constantly being filled with stuff. Whatever has our attention has our time. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about some neuroscience facts about being constantly distracted, constantly being filled with information. So raise your hand if you think you're a great multitasker. Okay. Excellent. Raise your hand if maybe you're not a great multitasker, but you do multitask. You have to. Okay. So, neuroscience facts. Every time that we shift our attention from one thing to another, the brain engages a neurochemical or a neurological switch that uses up nutrients in the brain. Okay? Every time we engage from one task to another, we're using up resources in our brain. So to multitask actually is a misnomer. There is no such thing as multitasking. Because multitasking intimates that you're doing two different things at the same time, right? But we're not. Actually, what we're doing is we're shifting from one thing to another thing. And we're not being focused on either thing. Because we're shifting from here over to something else. And in the process, we're using up brain nutrients. And it helps make us unfocused, and it makes us stressed. Going from one topic to another, from one activity to another, is very stressful. Think about when you sit down to do your work, and a child comes in and interrupts. Is that stressful? Yes. Why? Because you want to be focused on what it is that you're doing, and now your attention has been drawn away. So that's an involuntary interruption. But what we do to ourselves is voluntary, where we are constantly choosing to go from one activity to another activity. We're sitting down, we're doing something, and I get a text. What do I do? Well, not what do I do, because I ignore it. What do most of us do? I know, that's, I didn't say that as a positive. I didn't say that as a like, oh, look at me. I said that because I know people in here text me and I don't answer. What do? We look at it. So we purposely go from whatever it is that we were doing to now look at this thing. And then typically what happens after we look at it? We respond to it. And then typically what do after we respond to it? Do we like, are we like, oh, okay, well that's done. Now I'm going to put my phone down. Is that usually what happens? What happens? Okay. Either we wait for the reply, depending on the person that we're texting, or now my phone is in front of me, right? Oh, do I have any notifications at the top? And you push down, and you look at those, and then maybe you'll go look at your email, or maybe you're like, oh, I wonder what's going on in the world. Even though 5 minutes ago I just checked to see what was going on in the world, and you go and you start reading your news feed, right? To see whether there's something different that's happened. And then, after about how much time goes by, would you say? How much? Okay, 20 minutes. You put your phone down. Is that typical of most of us, would you say? Yeah? No? Okay, you got to give me some feedback. Yes. Now, how many times does that happen in a day? So we are constantly switching our mind from one activity to another, which makes us unfocused and stressed. Now, here's the lovely thing about all of this, as we're unfocused and stressed, from some cognitive psychology facts. When a person is more stressed, they tend to shift their attention more often. So the more stressed we are, we tend to interrupt ourselves. So I want you to think about this. Let's say that you're sitting down and you're trying to write something on the computer. You're doing a project, right? And you hit like a mental block. So now you become stressed. And usually, if you think deeply, where does that stress come from? You've hit a mental block, you have a project, it's due at a particular time. Where is the stress actually coming from? What? Time. Okay, well, let's go a little deeper. Where's the stress? Yes, there is a pressure of time, but where's the stress coming from? It is coming from ourselves. Why? Okay, so what if you run out of time? You're not focused. Let's go down to the core of why are you anxious? What's the fear? Failure. Okay, so here's really what's happening. Now, some of you could have been like, well, duh, of course, right? But some of us don't actually reflect on what's going on inside of us. What really is the fear? The fear is I'm not going to get this done, and if I don't get this done, then I'm going to fail, and there's a cascade of events then that happens because I'm not going to be able to get this done. Or somebody is going to look at me and think that I'm really not as smart, or I'm not going to get the promotion, and all of these things are going on inside of us that we may or may not recognize on the surface. All we recognize is that we're anxious and we're stressed. And typically, when that happens, what do we do? Do we just push through it? And we're like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to pray and I'm going to ask God to help me go through this mental block. And if you do that, good for you. But what do most of us do? We want a distraction. We want something that is going to relieve the stress. So if the phone is there, we might pick up our phone. But we're already on the computer, so there's really no need for that, right? So we just make a little tab, and we, or maybe it's already open, and we go to whatever site it is that's going to give us some kind of, right? Actually, what we're doing is we're kind of medicating ourselves. We're using something to allow the anxiety to go away. But we're exacerbating or we're worsening the stress. Because now we've shifted from one activity to another, which actually increases the stress that we're in. So this makes us less productive. And the less productive we are, the more stressed we become. So then we go down the little tube. And actually, this goes to the point where we use our social media, we use our phones, we use this technology, which again is not bad. I'm not saying that it's bad. But we use it like all the way up until we go to bed. And then what does that do? So I'll give you an example from me. So I made a decision, I'm going to bed at 10. Okay? I'm so tired, I'm going to bed at 10. I get into the bed and I say, you know what? My iPad's right there. So I'm gonna open it up just for a few minutes. And I don't know, I'll play Candy Crush just for a few minutes, just to kind of relax before I go to sleep, right? At 1 o'clock, I shut the lights off. How crazy is that? I intended to go to bed at 10. I could have had a great night's sleep, but because of one little thing that I did, now my sleep is tanked, my next day is tanked, and I'm back in the spiral. So the shorter a person gets in sleep, the more likely they are to check their social media. Ooh, did you know that? The less sleep a person has, the more likely they are to check their social media. How are those things connected? Yes, because the less sleep you have, the more, what are you? The more stressed you are. The more stressed we are, the more we medicate with this social media, this technology that we have. So it becomes a big vicious cycle. Let's talk about some more facts before we move on. I don't know if you, can you see this graphic where it says internet or water? Right, so you're in the desert and this way is going to where you have Wi-Fi and then the other direction is going to where you have water. And actually it's a big conundrum. It's a problem. Which way do you go? Do you go to the Wi-Fi? Do you go to the water? Wi-Fi, there you go. That's a thinker right there, excellent. So we just came back from Jerusalem and the very first question that the teenagers had was, is there Wi-Fi? Like, we're on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. We're going to see things that we read about in the Bible. Like, you're going to see the Bible come alive, right? No, they just want to know if there's Wi-Fi. We're running down the road in Jerusalem, seeing things that really are pretty remarkable. And they're in the back of the bus, ticked off because the Wi-Fi in the bus isn't working. That's a problem. Okay, a decade ago, 10 years ago, think of where you were 10 years ago. We shifted our attention at work every 3 minutes, which means that you got a pretty good solid 3 minutes out of our work. That's good. Before we actually shifted things. Today, it's every 40 seconds. We're shifting our attention every 40 seconds. And we do it all day long, not just when it's at work. The average person, look at this, the average person checks their email 74 times a day. 74 times a day. I mean, unless like, I don't know what even job you could have. Like, 70, that's a lot. That's a lot. And switches tasks on their computer an average of 566 times a day. That means you go from one tab to another tab or you actually are shifting whatever it is that you're doing. 566 times a day. The average adult. So remember before we talked about how when we get interrupted and we kind of go down the rabbit hole, like we look at our phone, there's a notification, then we start doing things, and it probably takes us 15, 20 minutes to get back on track. If we add up all those times, for the average adult, we're actually spending over 3 hours a day in those distractions. Raise your hand if you feel like you don't have enough time in the day. I'm going to raise my hand. That you don't actually have enough time to do things. So this is where we actually get to reflect. So I'm going to tell you this. When Besma asked me to do this, to give this talk today, I thought, oh, thank God, finally I get to give a talk that I'm not going to be convicted on. Because usually when I'm given a talk, I like get very convicted in the preparation. Like, I don't do this. Oh, I need to change this. And I thought, you know what? I don't have a problem with technology. I mean, half the time I ignore my texts, so, which is a personal issue. Like, there's a character flaw. Finally, I'll get to talk about something that I'm not going to get convicted on. And then I started paying attention to my own habits. And I started paying attention to the things that I actually do with the phone and how I am sucked in to reading my news first thing in the morning when I go and look and see what's happened in the world, you know, because goodness knows I don't want to be out of sync with things, right? And how long that actually takes. It was 4 hours. By the time I tallied everything up, everything, with my texts and my looking at things and my going to Facebook just for a few minutes, it ended up being 4 hours. And I'm like the first person to say, well, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to do all of these things. 4 hours, that's a ton of time. So, now let's talk about some reasons why do we do this. Why are we doing this? Is it just because, like, we just don't have self-control as human beings? Is it because, like, what's happening? Why do you guys think? Why is this happening to us? Why is there such a pull? Yes, sir. And that's the reason. That's, he hit it right on the head. We're getting addicted. We are definitely getting addicted. Facebook, Netflix, Snapchat literally have thousands of engineers whose entire job it is. Does anybody here do this for a living? If you do, you do a great job. Whose job it is to get our attention. That is like their whole purpose, is to figure out a way of how to get our attention. Remember from Pilgrim's Progress from the clip that I showed? And he's dropping the little glittery things? That's their job. Their job is to put glitter in front of us so that our attention is taken off of our goal, off of our path, and going in a different direction. The CEO of Netflix once said that his biggest competitors on Netflix is YouTube, Facebook, and sleep. So their job is to figure out a way to entice people to not sleep, which, again, if you talk to the average college student, they do an excellent job of this, right? When we're watching a whole series of a show in two nights, non-stop. The only two industries that refer to their customers as users are drug dealers and technologists. Which is very interesting. So I read in this book that every time we go and look at our phone to see if we have notifications or if somebody contacted us, there's anticipation, right? Oh, did somebody try to contact me? What's going on here, right? When somebody actually contacts us, we get a little rush of dopamine, which then encourages us to continue to check our phone. And it has been said that because it's unpredictable when we go to look at our phone, that the unpredictability of this increases the likelihood that we are going to continue to do this behavior. And then we kind of get sucked in. And then it leads into a habit, which then would lead into addiction. And actually, because we are dopamine dependent, that's what's going on. And they likened it to a slot machine. They likened, the people who made this likened what we do to a slot machine, to gambling. So, their job, their career, their entire livelihood is to make us dependent on their technology and their services. And they're all competing for our attention. And they're doing a great job. I don't know if you can see in the picture, there's an enormous animal next to this boat. And he's on his phone. We are like losing our ability to even discern things like in the world around us because of this technology. And the worst part, in my opinion, so I'm pretty opinionated, the worst part of this is that we are indoctrinating our kids into this. Not just that we are affected by it, but we are giving our children the very tools that are, in the end, going to destroy them. And I know you're probably going to be rolling your eyes and be like, okay, why is she talking in such great dramatic terms? This is going to destroy them. Because they're not going to be able to think for themselves without Uncle Google around. They're not going to be able to navigate anywhere because they're so dependent on this technology. They're not going to be able to entertain themselves, which is going to cause more problems at home because they're going to need constant stimulation. It's a problem. Aside from all the other things that all the other places that they're tempted to go and all the things that they're tempted by with the websites that are there. Regardless of all that, just the fact that they're relying on this for them to be okay. You want to pacify your kid, you give them your iPhone. Or you give them, or the thing that drives me, okay. So we're in church, right? The liturgy is long. It's long. And anybody who's ever had kids in our liturgies has gone through the same thing. It's long, it's hard, you get a crown at the end. Like, it's hard. Do not give your children an iPhone or an iPad to shut them up during the liturgy. Because actually what you're doing, it's counterproductive in the end. Are they going to be quiet in the moment? Yes. Do you not have to deal with them lifting up your skirt and kicking you and, you know, going over and bothering the teta who's going to come over and tell you how shitty your kid is? So, yes, it's going to stop it in the moment. But what are you teaching your kid? Like, what's the bigger message that you're giving them? Is that they need, they get what they want. They should be continually entertained. And what? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is that it's more important than church. Because we're not teaching them how to be reverent. You're teaching them how to be occupied. But what we should be doing is teaching them how to be reverent. How to come into the church. How to be able to stand. And so really, especially if you have toddlers, you just kind of have to resign yourself to the fact that you're probably not going to pray for a couple years in the church, right? Except for throwing up the, like, oh, God, help me before I kill this kid. Like, you're not going to be able to stand there and really have that deep connection that you that we all desire. That's not going to happen for a couple years. Our job when we have the toddlers and the little ones is to teach them who God is, and that when we come in, we need to be reverent of him. And when they start making noise, you don't wait for Abuna to stop and do the walk of shame. You take them out on your own, right? And you go outside, and you let them run around a little bit because 3 hours is long. And then you say, okay, so we've had our play time now. Now we're going to go back in and have God time. We teach them things. But what the technology allows us to do is to take, and all of us, I'm not like blaming anybody because thankfully we didn't have this technology when my kids were little. But what the technology allows us to do is to take the easy route and to just make them quiet in the moment and not do the hard work. But we're growing human beings. And we want our human beings to be well-developed and well-rounded. So you make sacrifices in the moment, knowing that in the years that come after that, they and you are going to reap so much greater reward. That's an excellent question. And so for the sake of time, I'll address it, but we're going to talk about it a little bit later. So that's one of the things that drives me crazy, too, is that the schools are no help. So the question is that our school systems now are going paperless, right? Which financially makes sense. There's no books anymore. Everything is on a computer. So they don't get to read a book. They're reading things on the, especially by the time they get to high school. Everything is on the computer. And here we are trying to be parents that are helping our children develop, and everything's on a screen. So what do? You limit their screen time. And you allow them to do their lesson, whatever it is that they have to do. You do as much of it as in an analog way as possible. And they're going to fight you, but push through. And then whatever they have to do on the screen, you let them do on the screen, but you boundary the time. Why shouldn't they be able to have their phones if you can just go ahead and control their screen time? I'll pose that to you guys. So the question is if there's a capability, so I said that I don't think that you should give your little ones smartphones. That's why you're asking this, right? Yeah. But if there's a capability to be able to control the screen remotely, then why not give them a smartphone? Okay, because they don't need it. Okay, so they're put in an environment where they have to have it. So now we have to ask ourselves, is that true? Why does an 11-year-old need a phone? No, that was not my question. That's why an 11-year-old wants a phone. Why does an 11-year-old need a phone? That's why. You are 11, and I do think because when I was growing up, there were pay phones, and everybody needed to have a dime, right? So that if they needed to call home or they needed to call somebody, they could call them. I do believe that in our world today, our 11-year-olds, because we are busy and we're in different places with different activities, I do believe that our 11-year-olds need a phone. They need to be able to contact you. You don't need a smartphone for that. So why do our 11-year-olds need a smartphone? To play games. Okay. So, but that's not what I heard you say first. What I heard you say first, not to put you on the spot, but what I heard you say first, because we're having a conversation, right? What I heard you say first is because everybody else has one. So, again, please remind me, because we're all here in this place. What is our goal? What's our goal? So, in the example that I had is to reach the celestial city, right? Our goal is to commune with God. That's our goal. If we get them a cell phone, or a purse, or a pair of shoes, or a shirt, or whatever, or a car, or whatever it is, because everybody else has it? What are we teaching our kids? That we need to follow the crowd. And everything that is on the path that is set before us, everything that's on the path that is set before us is, we are to do what? We're to go against the world's way. So we have to think a little bit deeper than our child's initial discomfort. Or our initial discomfort, because then we feel guilty that we don't think we're being a good parent because everybody else that we hang out with lets their kids do whatever. Yeah. So when they move to middle school, it's required to have what? They're not required to have a smartphone. Okay. Smartphone's like a little computer. Why not? What's the issue? Yeah, I do. But, I mean, is that the wise thing? So we're not going to talk about right and wrong, right? Let's talk about wisdom. What's the wise thing? Do you want, so when your kid grows up and they're 18, do you want them to be able to have a conversation with a human being? Do you want them to be able to sit down and not be awkward when it comes to actually talking to somebody face-to-face? Or do you want them to be like everybody else? And I'm going to tell you something. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm getting up on my soapbox again, and I'm on slide 14 of 32. So we get to deal with kids as they're starting relationships, right? And what we're discovering is that these young men have no clue how to go to a young lady and ask her on a date. Because they are so used to texting. And I will tell you, so they don't know how to study face-to-face and to maybe deal with rejection or maybe to deal with discomfort because they're not equipped because they're so always texting on their phones. So there was a study that was done between young people and their grandmothers. This is kind of interesting. And so these young adolescents to break a date with their grandmother. And what they discovered is that when these kids were told to break this obligation with their grandmother, if they texted their grandmother, they could break the obligation and feel zero guilt. And then they were told to call their grandmother and break the obligation. And they did that, but the majority of them felt guilty and then fulfilled the obligation. Because they got to hear their grandmother's reaction. They heard her tone. They didn't just see a sad emoji pop up on their screen and then, like, who cares? Then they had them do it face-to-face. When they had them do it face-to-face, do you know what they discovered? They couldn't break the obligation. And they fulfilled it. We are made for face-to-face connection. We're made for community. We're made to be connected. The bill of goods that we're sold about technology is great to get information, but not to make us connected to each other. And when we use it to make us connected to each other, actually we're less connected and less equipped than if we just toughed it out and practiced interacting as long as possible. Our kids were 16. Yeah. Right. So you still boundary it. But it is, there are other things with smartphones that would be a reason to keep them on a flip phone. And typically, where are you charging your smartphone? Typically. You're charging it by your bed. You're not charging it by your bed. Where? In the kitchen. That's good. Stay with that.
Well, I was going to say, I think the idea for the parents that are worried about the younger kids telling them no because they don't want to fight with them, and they think they can control, like, you'll only use it for an hour, I'll control it. But I think once it's in their hand, it's going to be a lot harder to fight the battle once it's in their hand versus the battle in the beginning just saying no.
From my experience, and I don't back away from a fight, from my experience, prolong the smartphone as long as possible. And put boundaries on all of this stuff as long as possible. Okay. So, what are the results? I think I talked about this a little bit. The results of all the noise, the distractions, the continuous shifting of the brain tasks, this is for us and for our kids. A decrease in creativity. There's a complete decrease in creativity. Because people aren't allowed to actually sit with themselves and imagine things. Nobody has to imagine anything when you have a smartphone. Exactly. You don't have to think through anything. So therefore, there is a decrease and a weakness in problem solving. There's a reduction in the amount of good sleep. And there's a noticeable increase in agitation and short-tempered. And an increase in anxiety and depression, which seems counterintuitive, especially when most of the time we're using these things to be connected to each other, and yet we are more anxious and more depressed as people than before. Why? Well, part of it is because of the other things that I said about shifting your attention, but the other part is that we're not really connected to each other. Just because you send an emoji or you hit a like, or you respond on a Facebook message, that's not connection. We're made for face-to-face connection. So the results, again, interestingly, again, the more connected online are the least connected in community. So all these kids who are in these groups or these gaming groups and they're interacting online, when you put them in community, when you put them face-to-face with human beings, they are the least connected. They are the least able to bond with each other. So we disconnect from ourselves, we disconnect from other people, and unfortunately, we disconnect from God because there's no time. Where our attention is, that's what has our time. So, as Scripture says always, that is the path to wisdom, is in returning and quietness. In returning, that means turning back, and quietness, stillness, is salvation. In stillness and trust shall be your strength. So remember that. Our worlds are filled with noise. Filled with noise. In quietness is our salvation. Not with all the activity, and I got to put my kid in this, and I got to put my kid in that in order for them to compete. Do you know who the great equalizer is? God is the great equalizer. If you don't put your kid in one activity, but you rear them in the admonition of the Lord, they're going to be successful. They're going to be wise people. They're going to be able to interact with other people. They're going to be people who give and don't take. They're going to be people who share. They're going to be people who are generous, which is what the world needs in order to be successful. God is the great equalizer. Don't fall into the thinking of the world that you have to do all of these activities or your kid is going to miss out. And then have them miss out on God. Because there's no time. So, it is time to stop the madness. And Besma and Murad gave me this book called Digital Minimalism. It is written from a secular perspective, but it has very good techniques, if you want to call it that, for all of us. Nothing I'm going to say from now until the end is going to be profound. Maybe it wasn't even before. Nothing I'm going to say from now until the end isn't stuff that you're like, okay, well, that, like, of course, that's very common sense, right? The thing is that from now until the end, ask yourself, is this something I would be willing to do? Is this something I'd be willing to do, knowing that I raised my hand and said, I don't have enough time? Knowing that I use technology the way that we talked about how we use technology, and to reflect and to see, could I benefit from having extra time in my life? And if I did, what could I do with that time? So, in this book, and I recommend if you're interested in this that you get the book, because it's research-based, and it talks about all these people who actually have done these things and the results that they've experienced. And our church is so helpful because we fast. I mean, we're supposed to fast. Like, it calls for a 30-day fast from optional technology. So what does that mean? First of all, what is that button? What's the button? Power. See, most of us don't even know, like, that's the off button, right? Shut that off. Most of us, that's the on button. Shut off our optional technology for 30 days. So think about what that would be like. First of all, what would be my optional technology? And would I be able to shut it off, to shut it down for 30 days? A lot of us, when we start fasting, like the Great Fast, we'll go off Facebook, right? Which is great. But what this calls for is a little more drastic than that. All optional technology, shut it down for 30 days, see what happens. During the fast. So here is, I'll tell you what will happen. In the very beginning, you're going to experience a lot of discomfort. A lot of discomfort, right? When you stop at a stoplight, what do you usually do? Oh, I just sit there and ponder life, waiting for the light to turn. What do you do at a stoplight? I see you. You're in the car next to me.
Even without lights, I'm a truck driver. I'm not filming. I see it on the freeway.
Exactly. You pull out your phone. Did anybody text me? Did anybody call me? I need to see what's going on. You pull out your phone to occupy the time. You're standing in line in the grocery store. What do you do? Do you talk to the person next to you? Do you strike up a conversation? Sometimes, that's excellent. But usually, what do? We pull out our phones. When you're waiting for something, we pull out our phones, right? Because we don't like downtime. Next thing is you get to it once you reflect on that. Then you get to experiment because you have free time now. You get to experiment in all of these other things that you might want to do with that time that you always said, I wish I could do this if I had the time. And at the end of the 30 days, see, we're not crazy people. At the end of the 30 days, we reintroduce the technology back on our terms, on my term. So I'm in charge of this. It's not in charge of me. So now let's talk about this. Okay, fast from optional technology. So by technology, I mean like the general class of digital tools. So we're talking about email, we're talking about Facebook, we're talking about Reddit, we're talking about Snapchat, we're talking about Netflix, we're talking about news sites, gaming, all of it. Okay, but you get the general idea, right? Okay. Well, actually, she is my candidate. She's still my candidate. So, the first thing to do is consider it optional technology if it's not going to harm your life. Okay? If it's not going to harm your professional life, if it's not going to, like, don't decide, okay, I'm not going to answer any email for 30 days, and then go into the office and be like, oh yeah, sorry, I'm doing a 30-day fast. Like, that's going to harm your life. So don't do that. We're talking about optional technology. Don't confuse convenient with critical. Because some technology is very convenient, like reading Bible on our phone. Very convenient, right? But is it critical? No, not critical. Because you can carry a Bible with you. There's another way, so you don't have to use technology for that. If it is critical, so here this does apply to you. If it is critical, boundary it. What does that mean? Just because you got a text. So Abuna Yunan, actually, he's like the poster boy for this. Because what does he do? Do you know what he does? When you text him, does he text you back right away? Not usually, right? Why? Because he has a time that he looks at his texts. So let's say 10 o'clock in the morning, he looks at the text that he got before then, and then he sends out his answers, right, at that time. And then there's a whole big chunk of time that goes by, and you might text him in the meantime, but maybe at 4, he looks at his texts again. So we can boundary. No, you don't like that? Excellent. Okay. Super. Okay, so we're serious about doing this. Right? So what we can do is maybe put a different ringtone for the school so that when it comes, then I recognize in my ear, see, which, okay. So if we hear that, then we know I have to answer that, right? But everything else, I don't have to answer. It can wait. Most things are, unless you're a surgeon or, you know, you got to go on life flight, most things are not emergencies. Most things, they can wait a couple hours. Emails is the same way. You can read it. I know that there are people who get hundreds and hundreds of emails, and so you have to like keep up with it. Again, you tailor this to where it can work for you. But you can still boundary them. So there are definitely ways for us to take control of these things. Remove all social media apps and notifications from your phone. Get rid of them. And then write down your rules. So if you decide, I'm not going to look at my emails until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, write that down somewhere to remind you. Because we're all in the habit of going to things. So you write it down to where you can see it, just to remind you. Okay, now this part is really the most important. So I know that you're getting tired. I can already tell you're kind of like going down. But please stay with me just for a few more minutes, because honestly, if you decide to do the fast, this part that I'm about to talk about is the most important part. And that is that you start to pay attention to yourself. Because when all these distractions are gone, now you free up time so that when you're at the stoplight, instead of filling your mind with these other thoughts, you get to actually have thoughts. You actually get to reflect on what's going on. And again, in the beginning, you're going to be very uncomfortable. It's going to cause a lot of discomfort initially. But use this time to understand, like I said, what's going on inside of us and to be able to engage other people, but most importantly, to be able to engage God in that time, even in those little moments. So before this book, before there was even anything digital, St. Basil of Caesarea talked about attentiveness. And attentiveness is paying attention to what's going on in my soul, paying attention to the movements inside of me. Remember when we talked before about when you get stressed because you hit a mental block? To being able to sit there and figure out, what am I really stressed about? Yeah, there's a time pressure, but the thing that I'm really stressed about is that I'm afraid that I'm going to fail at this. And then to be able to offer that up to God. But if we don't ever give ourselves time to think, and that takes time. If we don't ever give ourselves time to think about those things, we're never going to get there. We'll never offer those things up to God. We'll always be in a state of stress and superficiality. So what did he say? He said that attentiveness awakens the awareness of the soul and allows the stewardship of the mind. We're supposed to be stewards of our thoughts. We're supposed to be stewards of what our mind ruminates on. There's supposed to be a fruit that comes from that. We're not supposed to be passive and just allow everything that the world has to offer into us without really even considering it, which is what happens with a lot of the technology that we put ourselves in front of. Attentiveness to ourself and what's going on inside of us gives the awareness now of our soul's priority over the Bible, over the body. So when we're stressed at the computer, right, we recognize that there's a bodily stress. Maybe we go eat, maybe we go on social media, maybe we go and call somebody. All of that is to get rid of what's happening inside our body. But when we stop ourselves from doing that and we sit there and we understand that this is really a soul issue, then we can go to the only one who actually can take care of the problem, that we get to cast our care on God because he cares for us. Otherwise, we're just like self-medicating. Allowing for attentiveness allows us to engage in reality and not fantasy. And if you actually think of it, when you sit yourself in front of Netflix, are you engaging in reality? No. Ever. Maybe it's somebody else's reality, and who would want to engage in that anyway? But otherwise, it's fantasy stuff. The people that you see on TV are not, those images are not of real human beings, right? The images that we get to see in magazines, those are not images of real human beings. That's fantasy. The more we put ourselves in front of that, the more we make that our expectation, and then we're all disappointed because we look like real human beings. It allows us to have time for self-examination. Before this, when we're constantly noisy and busy and distracted, there's no time for self-examination. And the refusal to go in the affairs of others. Now let's actually be honest. What does Facebook do? That's what it, unless like, you know, there's the occasional article that pops up, right? Really, what is it? You're looking at the life of other people and making judgments. Well, I can't, did you see what happened? Did you see what she did? Did you see where she went? Did you see, usually guys, I don't think, I hope not. Usually it's like a woman issue. Ultimately, if we allow ourselves to be attentive, then we can gain a knowledge of God. Remember that our goal is a celestial city. Our goal is to stay on this path, not to be distracted by all the glitter or the technology that the world has to offer. Okay, I begin to ask the right questions. Most of the time, we're not even asking the right questions. So Albert Einstein said that if he had an hour to solve a problem that his life depended on, he would spend the first 55 minutes figuring out what the right question is to ask, because the right question is the linchpin. We get, then, time to reflect on what are the right questions. Why am I here? What is this all about? Start questioning things, and then reflecting on what those answers are. So that when our kids come to us and ask us the big questions, we're not fumbling. Because when we fumble, or we tell them something that's not right, or we don't say, you know what, I actually haven't thought of that, let's figure this out together. If we don't do that, they're not going to stay in the church. They're going to think that all of this is just like, it's all just for show, it doesn't mean anything. If you've done this all this time and you don't even have the answers, you can't tell me why we're here. You can't tell me why these things happen, or direct me to somebody who can. Just like, yeah, I don't know. Okay, so what are we doing? And I'm able to hear God. Because I'm not, he's not being drowned out by everything else. So, I'll skip that. And I'll go here. So, God was speaking to Elijah. And he was teaching Elijah something. And in this verse it says, then God said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And before the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. So it was when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? God is always talking. God wants us to be saved. God wants us to stay on the path. He's constantly talking to us, but our discernment is dull. Because we're too busy listening to all the messages of the world. We're too busy looking at our technology. We're too busy looking at our notifications or listening to this or looking at that or reading this to hear God's voice. We can't have a relationship with God if we don't hear him. And there's no way that we'll be able to fix our heart if we're not able to consider what's going on inside our heart. Mina, do you have a question? Comment? Do you have a question or a comment? No? Okay. Okay. So, that's what this freed up time allows us to do, which is amazing. Then, what we can do now, because hopefully we'll have hours freed up, is we get to experiment. So, if we actually embark on this road, undoubtedly, there's going to be some substantial time that we're going to gain back. And we can use that to read scripture. We can use that to have our quiet time with God. And we can also use it to spend intentional time with our kids that's undistracted. No phones, no TV. We're actually going to hang out with our kids, find out what it is, who they are, discover who they are, invest in the things that they love to do, so that you can bond with them, so that when they get older, they're going to remember that my parent isn't just like the authority figure. There's somebody actually who's invested in me. Consider learning a new skill. Read a book. If you actually look at the book, if you actually pick up the book, Digital Minimalism, one of the anecdotes or two of the anecdotes in there is that when some of these young professionals actually went on this 30-day fast, one of them read 8 books in a month. One of them read 5 books in a month because of the time that was freed up. One of them read 3 books, and those were 3 books more than they had ever read their entire life. Okay, we're almost done. And then we get to reintroduce the technology. So we've fasted from it. We've learned from ourselves. We've reattached to God. Now we get to reintroduce the technology because, like I said, we're not anti-technology, right? This stuff is, a lot of it is really good and helpful. But we're going to do it in a wise way. So Proverbs 4 says, let your eyes look straight ahead. Again, we're looking at our goal. We're making our decisions based on our goal. So let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path at your feet and let all your ways be established and do not turn to the left or the right and remove your foot from evil. The optional tech that we allow back into our life needs to fulfill these certain criteria. Number one, it needs to serve what I deeply value. So you need to sit with yourself a little bit and decide, what is it that I deeply value? So for me, something that I deeply value is knowing what's going on in the world. So for me, then, so getting some kind of news would be something that I would reintroduce back after my fast. But whatever it is that you deeply value, those are the things that you're bringing back in. Then you have to decide what is the best way to use the technology to serve that purpose. And if it's not the best way to serve that purpose, then replace it with something that's better. And have rules. Have rules attached to it. How am I going to use this? At what times am I going to use this? What are the boundaries that I'm going to have with it? And I'll give you some examples from real life. These are examples from the book. For me, they're very, very helpful. Stream Netflix only with friends. So if, you know, being able to watch a show or being able to discuss certain things with people is important, and that's a value that you hold, okay, you can do that. But don't do it alone. Make it a social activity. So do it only with friends. Consolidate the news from allsides.com. So allsides.com is a resource that you can go to where they give you a left perspective of whatever the event was, a right perspective, and I mean like conservative, or right, and then like a neutral perspective, right? So that, because we all know that if you like go on one website, you're going to get a bias. You go on another website, you're going to get a bias. But what this does is it consolidates all of that. So instead of going on these sites and then being like, oh, I wonder what that is, and then going again down, all of this is to keep things boundaried. Listen to the news roundup on a podcast as you're driving to work. Check social media only once per week. So you're still checking it. It's just only one time a week. Keep social media apps off your phone. Because really, the likelihood that you're going to go to social media on your computer is less likely than when you're walking around with it on your phone, because it's so convenient. Set up specific times a day to check and send texts. So again, it's the same kind of idea, same with emails. This was an interesting thing, especially for those of us who are truly busy because of all the different categories that we're involved in our life, is establish conversation hours. So we all know what office hours were when we were in school, right? Establish conversation hours. Set certain times aside during the week. So on Tuesdays from 9 to 11, you tell your friends, I'm available, that we can have conversation, we can have coffee, we can whatever. You want to go to a movie at that time? So Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 to 11, you call me, we'll schedule it, that's awesome. And you have that time set aside specifically for connecting with people. Set a curfew on your phone. So I know a dad who, as soon as he gets home, because he has little kids, he shuts his phone off. Doesn't matter who's calling him, it doesn't matter what crisis is happening, that phone gets shut off. And then when his children go to bed, so he's uninterrupted, he's not distracted, he's focused on them, spending time with them. When those kids go to bed, he turns his phone back on. There's two things that are happening there. Number one is you're having better interactions with your children. But the more important thing is that you're showing your kids that they are more important. That they are more important. How do you feel when you're talking to somebody and in the middle of the conversation, in the middle of the sentence, maybe you're pouring your heart out to them, they get a text and they pick up their phone and they read it as they're listening to you. How do you feel? You feel great? How do you feel? You feel like they don't care. You feel dismissed, right? You don't really want to open up to them anymore because clearly whatever's on their phone is more important than what you have to say. Our kids are the same, the very same way. It's disrespectful. And it's disrespectful whether it's coming from somebody who's older to younger or younger to older. It's the same deal. So this is interesting. So one millennial bought a watch. Okay, what does that have to do with technology? Well, she bought the watch because whenever she wanted to check the time, where did she go? To her phone. And what happened when she opened her phone? She saw the notifications. She thought, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and look at my news. So the whole thing blossomed all. But when she bought the watch, she didn't look at her phone. And then she wasn't sucked in to all of that. Yeah, so probably not the Apple Watch, if this is something that you're thinking about. And never click like. This was an interesting thing. So did you know that Facebook actually was not very popular when it started? It did not become popular until the engineers introduced the like button. And the like button is what drew people back into Facebook. Because when you posted something, you didn't just post it to let people know your opinion. Most of us didn't do that. Most of us posted it, why? Because we wanted affirmation for that opinion. We wanted people to tell us how beautiful that opinion was, how great it was, how, and they put a like button. So for people who maybe weren't, maybe somebody read it and was like, oh yeah, that's really good, but you know, they're not really inclined to write a whole thing about comments, all you can do is click the like. It gives the appearance that you're connected. It gives the appearance that you've been affirmed, when actually neither one of those things are happening. Refuse to click like. And if you like something that somebody says, then call them. Tell them, hey, I just saw what you posted on Facebook. That was really profound. Or I'd really like to talk to you more about that opinion. Call them. Have face-to-face interaction. Okay, now what are the benefits? So this is like 180 degrees. Benefits are an increase in creativity, getting stronger at problem solving. I guarantee you that if you do this and your whole family does it, you do it with your 11-year-old, and they have a question. Instead of like what we do, oh, okay, that's good. Instead of saying, okay, like in my family, I have lots of questions every day, right? So what do? Uncle Google. So what is the answer to this? What is the answer to that, right? Immediately, I don't really have to think. It just gives me the information. But when you do the fast and people have questions, write the questions down. I want to know the answer to this. Your kid has a question. I want to know the answer to that. And then you say, you know what, honey? In my day, when we had questions, do you know what we did? We went to the library. So how about if we go to the library and we'll figure out the answer to these questions and have them struggle a little bit and work through some things, develop some perseverance to be able to get the answer to questions and not allow them to grow into a sense of entitlement that as soon as I ask something, you need to answer. Somebody needs to answer. I need to have this immediately. It's actually like a growing thing for everybody. That's okay, they can think that. They'll benefit in the end. They get better sleep. We'll all get better sleep, right? We're not watching Netflix, and then you're like, okay, after this episode, I'll shut it off. And then it ends with a cliffhanger. And you're like, okay, after the next episode, I'll shut it off. And then it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and we are calmer and more patient with each other. We have decrease in anxiety, and we get to enjoy life more. We get to enjoy life more because we're actually living. We get to enjoy life more because we're actually connected. God made us so that we get connected with Him and with each other, face to face. And there's a space for God. We've freed up that space. So, you and I are the director of our own life. The thing that we say that we want, which is autonomy, we actually have. Because we get to decide where we put our focus. We get to decide how we use this stuff. Questions? Wow. Oh, clap. Glory be to God forever.